Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, everybody, it's Jessa. Welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast, and it's goodbye. I'm taking at least a pause and a kind of a wrap on Better Sex for now. I've been doing this for 4 years and counting. Four and a half, something like that. And I've really, really enjoyed it. And I'm feeling pulled in other directions, so I'm going to at least pause the show for now. But I have a fabulous last interview. I'm talking to Desiree Simone, who started off blogging about her own personal experience through divorce and relationships, and now has a podcast, Break Bottles, Not Hearts, that she does, I think, maybe full-time with her fiancé, where they are slightly inappropriate, and she calls herself the boozy bestie. What kind of advice does she give and talking about relationship and sex issues and challenges and mistakes and things like that? So it's basically advice. And so I've got her on the show, and she's delightful to talk about some of the most common mistakes people are making regarding relationships, dating, and sex, and what she advises people instead. So I hope you really enjoy it. I hope you have enjoyed the journey. The all 200 and whatever 40 episodes or whatever I've done over all these years will continue to live on. You can come back and revisit and explore the topics you haven't gotten to. And who knows, maybe I'll be back someday. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them, so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. Desiree, thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Thank you so much.
So I would love to hear the story about how you started doing what you're doing, and then we can launch into all the lessons that you share with people.
Well, absolutely. So I started my blog 11 years ago because I decided to get married very young. And unfortunately, that did not work. So I was married for not even a year.
How old were you? I mean, what's young?
What I consider young. I got married just a month after I turned 30.
Okay. Okay.
So met him at 29, married at 30, separated at 31, divorced at 32.
Wow. Okay.
So literally, boom, boom, boom. Yeah. So during the separation, I moved to a completely different state, and I reached out to one of my favorite college professors, who's one of my professional mentors still to this day. And she said, I really think you should just try to journal your feelings, get all of your emotions out. And I laughed at her because I'm not a touchy-feely person. I don't journal. I don't gratitude journal. Like, that's just not me. And she kept saying, I really think you'll find it to be very therapeutic. And so that's really how the blog started. Huh. It was just me writing down my thoughts. Never intended anyone to see it.
Okay.
Never was going to publish it. It was just, you know, back in, 2009, when everybody was doing a blog kind of thing. That's really what it was. And then I talked to a couple of my girlfriends.
Wait, let me ask you, was it therapeutic?
It was.
Okay.
It really was. And it was amazing. And I hate to say she was right. Valerie, if you're listening, you're right. Because here we are now, almost 10 plus years later, and all these opportunities I've gotten to write from it. But it's amazing to look back at what I wrote back then.
Yeah.
And to see and hear and feel how completely broken I was.
Oh, wow.
And how I truly thought, I will never get out of this dark spot. Mm. And then to look at it years later and go, oh, honey.
Yeah.
Look at you now.
Yeah.
You're so much happier. You're such a stronger person now. So I'm super grateful for it.
Yeah. What are you doing now that has evolved from that blog?
So from now, the blog has kind of evolved into the podcast, which is break bottles, not hearts. Ah. And so I always like to tell people it has a combination of two of my favorite things. Being that really good friend that you call when you need advice, and alcohol. Because okay. I'm a former bartender, I'm a former food and beverage manager. And if you've ever been to a bar, subsequently, bartenders are relationship therapists.
Right.
We hear the stories. I might not want to be part of your story, but I guarantee I'm going to hear about your baby mama and you're going to want me to give you some sort of, you know, liquid courage to not answer her phone calls.
Right.
It just kind of evolved over time. And I'm affectionately known as the boozy bestie because that's kind of how I've always been. I might not be able to sit there and tell you the smartest decision, but I'm going to make you a really strong martini and talk you out of making a bad one.
Okay. So that leads into what are some of the top bad decisions that you know, that either you've made yourself or that you hear about and talk to people about, especially as it relates to relationships and people's sex lives?
I think we'll definitely relate it to nowadays and the onslaught of social media and modern technology. And the funny thing is, I actually just posted a TikTok about this, which is this whole, you know what, my ex, I think I saw him do something on Instagram, so let me go look at his feed. Why are you still in some sort of social communication with your ex-partners?
Mm.
That's a huge mistake. And sadly, I see a lot of my girlfriends and a lot of women doing that. And I just want to see what he's up to, or I'm not doing anything and I'm not going to comment and I'm not going to like, but even still looking, that's still a form of engagement.
So what's the problem with that? Because somebody, you know, I'm thinking somebody's thinking, yeah, but we can still be friends after we've broken up. Talk about some of the slippery slope here, the danger of staying in contact like that.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. There is definitely a slippery slope. And I can even attest to, I actually have friends that are exes of mine. And it really is one of those, almost every single relationship is a case by case basis.
Mm-hmm.
The slippery slope then goes when you become a little bit obsessed as to what they're doing.
Okay.
You know, then you got to look on it every single day. And then it becomes, his mom posted something. Well, let me look on his mom's page. Or, oh, this is what his job's doing. And so, oh, what's he doing at work? And there's one thing to have that genuine, friendly kind of, oh, this is going on in his life, like, kudos to him. But then you start going down that rabbit hole of really trying to get additional information. You really have to wonder, where is that coming from and why is that important?
Yeah, I think the where it's coming from is interesting, right? Because I always believe we can do the same thing from sort of the best or from the worst. And maybe it's something people can tell inside, that I'm genuinely just supportive friendship with this person versus, wait, I've got this itch that needs to be scratched or this curiosity that isn't serving me. Or maybe I'm having emotional reactions to what I'm seeing that I wouldn't have if it was like just my other best friend.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
The emotional response part of me is definitely one that you just have to be careful of, because then it really gets you down into the whole, you know, do I really still have feelings? Am I really over this person? Am I really ready to move on?
Yeah. Okay. So is this, I mean, I guess I'll ask if it's something you've done, but like, what are some of the stories you've heard where this goes back? You know, because the other thing I'm thinking is not just me looking at my ex's stuff, but my current partner maybe, you know, having issues with this or something like that.
Yes, I am talking from personal experience.
Okay.
I'm definitely talking from personal experience. And I've been on both ends of it, where there was communication with my partner's ex. And I stumbled across this information and was gutted because it felt like an emotional connection that they were still holding on to. And when I thought our relationship was so solid, it was just a punch in the gut to kind of see there was still this emotional aspect that he was going on. Now, you would think, having gone through that, that I would not be the kind of person who would then be that person who would then have some sort of connection with an ex, which unfortunately I did. And my fiance actually found that information out. And it was definitely the hardest thing that we had to go through in our current relationship, because I 100% broke his trust and I had to regain it.
So there really was a little bit more than just that platonic staying Facebook friends or something.
There definitely was. And one of the things that kind of helped me go, okay, this is beyond wrong, was what was I getting out of it? And one of the things at the core of it was I selfishly liked the attention.
Mm.
I selfishly liked that there was someone else feeding me additional attention. And that was something that was so important for us both to heal, because it had me go in a really brutally honest, ugly way. I was being a big jerk about my ego, and I was being selfish, and I'm 100% wrong, and can admit that that was just a huge ego trip that I was going through. It is not you. It is 100% me. And I was being selfish.
What kinds of things can somebody ask themselves to sort of figure out where they are with this? You know, and if they haven't blocked their ex. Because that also seems, I mean, I don't know, I'm older, but like that seems extreme to block somebody. You know, like that seems like a really distinct cutting off. And maybe that's more appropriate in social media than real life. But assuming you haven't blocked someone, what should somebody be asking themselves about their use or their interests or how they're behaving around this to know, you know, if it's on the good side of the line or the less helpful side of the line?
You know, I think the very first thing they need to ask themselves is the first thing my fiance asked me, which is, if I did this, how would you feel?
Okay. If it's my partner doing this thing and exchanging these exact things or spending this amount of time scrolling, how would I feel?
How would you feel if the shoe was on the other foot, per se? So if you can kind of start from there, and maybe you can, in a lot of ways, be like I was at the time and be like, well, it really wouldn't be that big of a deal. But in some degree, it kind of would be a big deal. So I'd first have to say, if your partner were doing the exact same thing that you were doing.
And feeling about it the way you feel. Because that, again, I think we know something about what our butterflies are doing or whatever.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that person was getting that same kind of response. Then what would you do? How would you feel?
Yeah.
And then I think the biggest thing after that, after you really sat down and talked about that and were really, really honest, even if it makes you look like a jerk, because that's exactly what happened to me.
Yeah.
I looked like such a jerk when I was very honest about it. Then the next thing to probably ask is, what is it that I'm getting from this type of relationship that I feel like I'm not getting in my current one? And that was where I sat and I thought, I just like the additional attention.
Yeah.
I selfishly wanted more attention. So where was it in my current relationship that I was not getting that?
And was it true that you were not getting enough from your fiance, or is it more you just wanted more? You know,
it was, again, brutal honesty and full transparency. I wanted more.
Yeah.
But then it also was a different kind of attention.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that once we started talking about it, it was, okay, I wanted a different kind of attention where I felt more adoration and more appreciation versus, oh, well, I love you and things are great. And it's like, well, no, I kind of want to know that I'm genuinely being appreciated for the good and the bad and the big and the small.
Yeah.
And that was what really helped us.
Okay. What other kinds of things come up for people? I mean, there must be a list of 100 of them, but you know, what are the other one, top ones that come to mind?
So I think after you've sat down and you thought, you know, how would I feel if my partner did this? What is something I'm really getting out of this relationship? I think the other thing that you have to think about is, obviously there was some sort of emotional connection when you're with your ex. Okay. And obviously the relationship ended for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
I think one of the other things you really have to consider is this some sort of a scapegoat to get back with that person? And if so, in a really weird way, if you were 100% honest, do you really want to be with that person again?
Yeah.
And especially in my situation, and I definitely know people who've kind of been through something similar to what I went through. The answer was always, well, no, I don't want to be with my ex. I don't want to be back with them. I just like this feeling that I'm getting. And it's like, okay, well, that's the ego talking. That's what that boils down to.
I would imagine, though, there are people who would like their ex back because they got broken up with, you know, like it's their ex who ended it and they still are holding some sort of candle for this person.
Right. And if that is in fact the case, then that's going to bring you into a whole nother animal of, okay, so I'm looking at my current relationship and I'm feeling like I'm not getting something from it.
Yeah.
Still having this type of pull and push and whatever I'm feeling with my ex. So maybe I want to pursue it. So if that's the case, you really then need to next look at, so where do I move from for this?
Yeah.
Do I move in the direction of reconciliation with my ex? Do I go ahead and cut things off with my current partner? Do I cut things off completely and just try to figure out and heal on me?
Yeah.
Yes, there are those stories where people go back to their ex and things are great and they've healed. But you really have to be 100% honest, not only with your partner, but you've got to be honest with yourself, even if it makes you look bad.
Yeah. And I would imagine even if someone was broken up with, the fact that your ex-partner broke up with you and had a reason and did that. And I mean, that's already, seems to me, makes that relationship less desirable.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's definitely harder when you've been broken up with. There's a lot of what ifs. What did I do wrong? I want closure. And closure in a lot of ways, if I really look back at what I was doing, that was a part of it as well. There was, I didn't necessarily get the full closure at the end of our relationship. So I was kind of putting myself in the situation of, okay, well, maybe if we're keeping this going, I can kind of subsequently figure out what went wrong. I never got closure by doing that. It only made the situation worse.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So what other kinds of mistakes come up in the environment of your podcast and your life that people are commonly making?
I think some of the biggest mistakes that I'm also seeing a lot kind of along the lines of social media are the people who feel the constant need to make every aspect of their relationship public. I do not, for the life of me, understand that. Now, of course, that's ironic coming from a woman like me who has a blog and a podcast. Yeah,
right.
That's pretty public. But one of the things when I first started out with my blog, especially, and to this day, I never name names on my blog or the podcast. I do not talk about my ex-husband out of respect for our marriage might have ended. It was a great time in my relationship. I learned from it. But out of respect to him and what we had, I'd never talk about him. I never talk about his name. I just say I was married, didn't work. I learned lessons. So there are boundaries kind of in the world of what I do related to the blog and the podcast. So what I mean on the opposite side of people just having to put so much on social media, and I feel like Facebook is just the prime playground for this, which is every single day or hour, I'm sure any of us can go on Facebook. And you've got that one friend. And when her and Harold are going through stuff, you're going to know everything about it. And then what happens is there's the aunt and the coworker and the former softball coach, and they all get in putting in their two cents. And it becomes this volatile network of social media where you have all of these people putting all of this information in there. And then it's just feeding you to what end? So that's where I get a little concerned, where people make things a little too public. And again, even I take a moment to step back in what I do and talk about things kind of casually, and I make references. But especially that, you also kind of have to look at, well, why is this person doing it and to what gain?
If I understand you, you're saying it basically invites an awful lot of input and feedback from yes. people with a bunch of different agendas or ideas, or some of it might be helpful, yes. some might not. Oh, you know, plus just the privacy of your partner, poor Harold in this story, yes. right? Who's having yes. his laundry hung out in public.
But poor Harold is at work. He's trying to enjoy his day. And then all of a sudden his phone is just going off with all these people who are commenting. And so that's one of the things that you just have to very much be careful of, about, for one, being able to invite additional people into your relationship. And for two, what do you gain out of putting all of that, good or bad? And because I could say the same for good. If I can, you know, speak a little bit about the good side, one of the other things that I'm kind of seeing is there's like a lot of pressure to kind of have that quote unquote perfect Facebook relationship and that perfect Facebook marriage. And so again, I love to say that because I feel like I'm getting hip on the world of TikTok. I just did a TikTok about this a couple weeks ago where I talked about this hilarious quote that I saw, which was, I wish my relationship was as amazing as Facebook makes it out to be.
Right. Right.
Because there are some people whose marriages just look absolutely perfect. And I know firsthand of the struggles, but you do that because you want to put that image. And sometimes that can be just as dangerous to put out there, because all of us feel this need to compete. Mm-hmm. All of us feel this need to, oh, wow, that was what Valentine's Day was. And he took her there and he surprised her hair. And, okay, well, Harold, why don't I get that? And where am I getting it? There's so much competition that kind of happens, not only with ourselves, but with other partners.
Yeah.
So just as much as it's dangerous to put all of that negative and getting people involved into the minutia of the hard parts of the relationship, I've also seen where on the flip side of it, It's been just as difficult to have this picture perfect, pristine life that makes people feel, you know, I'm nowhere near that. And clearly I'm failing in my own relationship.
Going to take just a short little break to let you know about a new online course that I've got available called The Desire Spa. This is for women who are in an otherwise happy relationship but are struggling with sexual desire. This is a course just for you to figure out what is in the way of your desire, how to tune in and connect with what you could actually enjoy about physical intimacy, how to deal with all of this with your partner to totally transform your sex life. So it can be something you look forward to. And basically, it can just be one more great part of your relationship with your partner instead of this thing that drags you down. The first step would be to sign up for my free masterclass at intimacywithease.com/masterclass. It'll talk about how to want sex again and lead into the next steps if you are interested in joining me in the spa. Back to the show. You know, even beyond, I think, social media and the competitive aspect of that or the image of that, I just think of all the clients I've seen in my own therapy practice who will tell me, our friends think we have the perfect relationship. And we haven't had sex in a year or whatever it is, you know, and that's not even on social media. I think that, you know, that just sort of speaks to how hard it can be for people to share their struggles.
Exactly.
And people are not talking about, you know, the fact that they're not having sex or that something's going on and they don't know who to talk. You know, they don't think anyone else is struggling with it because no one's talking about
No one's talking about it.
This isn't even just on Facebook. This is like going out for coffee with your best friends. Like, people aren't necessarily sharing this stuff. It's really hard. It's isolating.
And that's one of the reasons why I started the podcast and one of the reasons why I started the blog, because outside of when I got past kind of writing about my own personal journey, and I've always taken humor and self-deprecating humor as like my go-to defense mechanism. I think I had a therapist who literally told me that years ago, and I thought, well, duh, have you met me? That makes sense. That's what I do. It's my coping mechanism. Right. And so I think once I moved past that, for what worked for me was then talking to my girlfriends and saying, hey, well, this is kind of how I'm feeling, and being amazed at how many of them would say, well, you know, I kind of was feeling the same way. And
yeah,
you know, I'm kind of thinking this way, and I haven't really had a chance to talk about it, or I, you know, I don't ever really mention it. And I thought, well, why not? Why not have that outlet? And I'm happy to be that outlet for you. And so again, when I started the blog, it kind of started just as a fun outlet for a lot of my girlfriends to then just come and vent to me. And then over time, it kind of built and built to having that community of women going, okay, this is, I'm not the only person going through this. And it doesn't seem silly to talk about this out loud. And so the one thing that I've enjoyed, especially on the, you know, the boozy bestie aspect of it is, yeah, it might seem funny and we're going to laugh and be slightly inappropriate, but at the same time, you're welcome to feel those feelings because you are not alone.
Yeah. You're not alone and you're not broken.
And you're not broken.
those are like the messages all day long.
Absolutely not. You were absolutely not broken.
Yeah. All right. So what kind of mistakes do you see people make around their sexual relationship, whether they're dating or, you know, even potentially, you know, partnered?
I think one of the biggest mistakes, and I will raise my hand to the classroom for those of you who cannot see this, I'm emphatically raising my hand, is not openly communicating to your partner the things that you like and the things that you do not like, which is why I say I'm raising my hand to this. So I have an autoimmune disease, and there are times where sex can be quite uncomfortable for me. And the beginning part of my relationship with my fiance, I purposely would not say anything.
Wow.
And every once in a while, he would kind of pick up on things, and I would lie to his face.
That's fine.
But everything is fine because I did not want to hurt his feelings. And then finally, he sat me down and said, you know, Desiree, for one, I can tell you're not enjoying this. You're in your head. What is going on? And that was where I had to sit here and say, okay, I truly care about this person. I need to let him in. And so over time, we got better with really communicating. And I swear, it seems like at times he knows my body better than me, where he'll sit there and be like, no, like, tell me, what is this? How are you feeling? Are you in your head? Are you in your body? Which is one of our most important things that we're saying is like, are you in your body right now? Because a lot of times I wouldn't be. I would just say, well, this feels great because I know he's enjoying himself. are you in your body? Are you enjoying yourself? So one of the biggest mistakes, and definitely something I think we all have to be better at, present company included, is being able to really talk very effectively to your partner about the things that work and the things that do not work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that also leads to an idea I talk about all the time, which is sex has to be for you too. I mean, it isn't just for your partner, you know? Yes. So this idea that somehow as long as they're happy, everything's okay, or their feelings can't get hurt, or they're, you know, it's like, man, this has to be working for both people.
It truly has
for it to be sustainable. Because otherwise, I mean, I say this too, there's nothing like pain to be a deterrent for interest in sex. I mean, you can't keep showing up and doing something that hurts.
Exactly.
You know, for too long. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And opened up a brand new level of communication for us, because I then realized that I was doing that for so long, for so many years. And I thought I was doing it thinking it was normal.
Right. Right. And thinking it was helpful.
And thinking it was helpful. Like this,
Yeah.
Because I'm not complaining and I'm making my partner happy. And it feels good-ish. I'm enjoying myself at times. So then it became, okay, so I can really get more out of this, even if it's a matter of, okay, we need to stop now. Let's regroup. Let's find a different position. Let's talk a minute. Let's cuddle. Let's kiss. Let's get a toy. Let's engage in a different way versus, okay, well, it's just got to be start and finish. And I need to make sure I've enjoyed myself, but most importantly, my partner's happy. It really then opened us into, okay, what is it that you need? What is it that he needs? And how can we make this amazing for the two of us?
Yeah. So it's like one thing I think when people have pain and are just sort of, you know, gritting their teeth through that. But then it's also, you know, I just think of all the women too that fake orgasms.
Yes.
You know, like, I'm not going to figure out or advocate for what I really need, but I'll just sort of pretend I'm having as good a time as they are so I don't hurt their feelings or something, or so I don't have to speak up about what it is what I need.
The fake orgasm is, that is a slippery slope, because at the end of the day, what does it serve for either person?
Yeah. You think it's, I mean, I guess people are thinking it helps their ego, like that they think they're doing this really great job or they can feel good about this encounter, and yet it's not real.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah. It's not real. And then you're kind of in misery. So what do you gain out of it? So,
yeah.
So exactly. Yeah.
What other kinds of mistakes come up around this?
Related to sex specifically?
Yeah.
Yes. So I feel like, oh my goodness, because this can be like a whole, you know, 2 hours related to that. So again, being able to communicate the things that you like and things you don't like. Something else, and I noticed this kind of happening actually with my fiance and I recently and a couple other people I was chatting with, is why is it not okay to have the conversation of things that you might want to try? I think, again, kind of in that whole, well, I don't want to tell them, I'm afraid. There are a lot of people who will sit there and say, you know, I've always wanted to try this, or I've always liked to engage in this, but I'll never say anything to my partner. I'll never bring it up. And then you realize that the thing that they might enjoy is a big part of sexual release and sexual enjoyment for them. And they've repressed it for years. So without going into detail for my fiance in particular, there was something that he mentioned that he always wanted to try. And I was completely shocked. Now, by the way, it's a very vanilla act. Don't get me wrong. It's very vanilla.
The intrigue, you know.
it's very vanilla. But part of me thought, that's very interesting. And he said, well, yeah, I just didn't know how to bring it up to you. And I thought, well, that's your first mistake right there. You should feel like you can bring up anything to me. So then that made me go, okay, well, what is it that I'm doing to make you feel that you can't bring that up to me? So that brought us on a whole nother side conversation where we talked about that. And so then, of course, when he said, well, I'd really like to try this in bed, I thought, well, the store is right down the street, so let's go. Let's go pick up a couple of tools and make this happen.
That's positive reinforcement, you know? See, bring this stuff up.
Absolutely. And of course, it ended up being something that he didn't realize that I also really enjoyed. So I think another big mistake is feeling like you can't talk to your partner. If that person is just as invested in you and your relationship, you should be able to be open to talk to them, even if it's about the things that might seem a little scary and uncomfortable, because at the same time, they should value your opinion and the things that you're interested in.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be my not caveat exactly, but you know, in my therapist hat here, I would be encouraging people to welcome those conversations without judgment.
Yes.
And even if it's something you have absolutely no interest in doing,
yes,
you don't, you know, don't, what they say, don't yuck their yum, yes, right? Don't shame them for this. Yes. Don't get, you know, it's like if they're going to bring to you what they find erotic and arousing, at least be accepting of that. Even if it's like, sorry, I've got no interest in it.
There's no kink shaming. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
If that's something that they're interested in, but you're not, listen to what they have to say and then maybe find a happy medium. So
yeah,
like I said, it worked out for us because it was something that I was very interested in and didn't realize that he was as well. So it proved to be a very delightful birthday.
Yeah. Cool.
And if I could think of something else, I think kind of also going along that kind of kink line. And I actually just had this conversation with a girlfriend of mine today, is that feeling, and I feel like it's definitely more prevalent in women, that feeling of, well, he watches porn and that's the woman he wants me to be.
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
I really need us men and women to get out of our heads feeling that way. You have to understand that that is a film industry, that is a form of acting in some ways, and you cannot sit here and believe that that is what you're expected to be. You are going to put yourself in a world of hurt if you have to sit here. And again, this goes for both men and women equally, because I know women who will watch porn and think, okay, well, I want him to be just like this guy. That is not real life. That is not how communication works. That's not how it works with partners. And I know women definitely feel this pressure of, I've got to look like this and I got to do this type of sex act. And this is what my partner is looking for, because if he's watching it, that's what he wants. If she's watching it, that's what she wants.
Yeah. So how do you counter that? I mean, besides the fact that this, I mean, you know, it's fantasy, right? It's some entertainment. It's not sex. But, you know, what do you say about why someone's watching something if they don't just expect their partner to be or do that thing?
I think just what you said then is the very first thing is you have to understand first and foremost, it's fantasy.
Yeah.
That is the one thing that you have to understand is it is fantasy. If a person is watching a movie and they are lusting over a unicorn, what are the chances you're going to go out somewhere and buy a unicorn? It is right. Fantasy. It is fantasy. It is fantasy. You can buy a horse and put something on the top of it, but I'm telling you right now, it's not a unicorn. So the very first thing is understanding that this is fantasy. This is not real life. The second thing is, of course, at the base level of it, there's something that's intriguing to your partner. So find out what that is. It might be the sex act. It might be the physical appearance. And it could be something totally different from you. So you can sit here and say, my husband watches pornography that's mostly Asian-based and I'm a Black woman. Well, there's nothing I can do to change that. Absolutely not. But is there another appeal to that aspect that you can sit here and go, this is what I understand?
Yeah, right. Because a lot of times I think it's about, it's so much less about the person in the porn or the sex act in the porn. It's about the power dynamic or the interplay or the roles or the, you know, it's way more mental than that for people, I think. So for trying to figure out what is it that's erotic about this and how could we translate some of that into what we do together?
I think that's the best point that you brought up, which is I don't think people realize the mental aspect that porn has. What are you getting? And that could be in some way even boosting your ego.
You
know, exactly. It's like, what exactly is it? You know, the people that are going to sit here and be like, well, I watch a lot of Schoolgirl and I watch this. And then really when you look at it is, maybe this man or woman feels like they're not being dominant enough because their partner is so dominant. And maybe what they're wanting is, well, maybe I would like to be the aggressor sometimes. Maybe I would like to live up this feeling of being more dominant in the relationship and in the bedroom. And that's what porn does, is it gives me that release. You would never know that unless you had a chance to talk to your partner about it.
Yeah. I don't know if you know this book. There's an amazing book by Michael Bader called Arousal, The Secret Logic of Sexual Fantasies. And he talks about how our eroticism is really an antidote to our own guilt and shame. And it moves something out of the way so it could be fully aroused, you know? So somebody who's, I don't know, it sort of speaks to our insecurities. It's why we're watching the porn we're watching. So it's not so much that we expect our partners to be some dynamo. It's like we get to be someone different in this little imaginary scene. So
we do. We get to imagine ourselves in something that we probably will never do. and our real life.
Right. And probably don't want to,
And that's a bigger thing. We probably never want to, but it's some sort of kind of emotional and mental disconnect that four-way we get to kind of escape.
Yeah.
So definitely being able to look at pornography and sit there and honestly say to yourself, okay, my partner is not expecting me to be this person.
Yeah.
But what is it that they're getting out of it that can help me understand what they need?
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely another huge mistake that people are making when they tried so hard to put themselves in that role of, well, this is what I have to be because this is what they're watching.
What about the people? Because this certainly shows up in my therapy practice. Not all the time, but there are some that say, hey, my partner shouldn't be watching porn, or my partner shouldn't even be masturbating. You know, that's cheating.
that is a hard one because I'm a pro porn woman. I'm a pro masturbation woman. And that's for not only myself, but for my partner. That's a really hard one. And again, I think for all of these, you kind of have to step back and say, well, where does this go? And my fiance and I actually just did an episode about masturbation on our podcast. And interestingly enough, he was saying, you know, I know a lot of people where that started first in the home of like, masturbation is disgusting, masturbation is evil. And when they go and they look further back as to why their parents felt that way, a lot of times there's a big religious aspect to mm-hmm. it. And so it went back to our religion taught us that this is dirty and there you go. So if you really go back and you step into where is this person getting this thought about masturbation? Where is this person getting this thought about porn? You kind of have to start from there and kind of peel it from like a layer onion kind of effect and say, okay, what is it that this person deep down is associating either dirty or shameful or ugly about porn or masturbation? And that's going to be the place that you start to kind of really understand for. The one thing I definitely would always tell people is I would advise you strongly not to sit here and say, well, now it's going to be my responsibility to change your mind.
Yeah.
Because you may never change their mind.
Yeah.
That might be something that's so deeply rooted that they will always think that porn is cheating or masturbation is ugly. At the very least, you can understand it, but do not feel like you are now in this position of, well, it will be my pleasure to change your mind.
That applies in so many ways, right? Not just about this.
Yeah. Not just this, but especially for something like this, where, you know, it's not bad and I'm going to show you why. And at the end of the day, you'll understand and appreciate it. You're going to set yourself up for a world of hurt if you go about it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Any serious mistake we haven't talked about that we really need? I mean, I know we could probably do this all day long, but anything else you really wanted to share that I didn't, you know, we haven't hit on yet?
Other serious mistakes. You know, I think there's a lot to be said. Again, I feel bad. I don't want to necessarily be a traitor to my own sex by saying this. I feel that we as women kind of fall in this trap of going out, especially in the dating world. It has been a minute since I've been dating, but I do still have friends who are very active in the dating world. But going out in the dating world and not being very honest and very specific about what it is that you're wanting. I saw this great terminology called breadcrumbing a few years ago, where it's a matter of going out and you either, and men and women can be accused of doing this, but you're basically just putting out this little bits of information, this little bits of vibe here and there, kind of tagging a person along, kind of like breadcrumbs, and they're picking it up here and there. That is not what we want because what happens is you get that other piece and you go out on the second date and get the other piece and you're going out on the third date and you can kind of get a sense that this person isn't really that committed, but they're answering their phone and you're having a great time. But that's not really what you want. You're following that little breadcrumb trail to nowhere. Being present and saying, you know, I'm having a really great time, but right now I am 38 years old. I have a great job. And this is what I'm looking for. That does not make you look bossy. That does not make you look like a B-I-T-C-H. That makes you look like someone who knows exactly what they want and what they're assertive about. And I think that's really important for men and women to do, which is, I might have met you on a dating app, but I have no intention of hooking up with you. But this is what I'm looking for in a relationship. Conversely, if you've met someone, however you did, app, online, whichever, and what you are looking for is something very intimate, then you also need to be very present about saying that as well, so that you don't then lead people on.
Yeah, it makes way more sense to be direct and sure, and then you might get lots of no's, but that's good because those weren't going to work out anyway, right? You're looking for somebody who's looking for the same thing we are.
Absolutely. A prime example that happened to me a few years ago was I have kind of always known that I never wanted kids. And I've made it very clear that I never wanted children. So for years when I was on dating profiles, I didn't put that on a profile because that seems a bit aggressive, a bit harsh to kind of go out there with that. But I remember going on a date. I matched with a guy. We went on a date. We had a great time. I mean, a really, really awesome first date. Probably one of the best ones I've ever had. And so the topic of family and things like that came up in conversation. And I said to him, hey, you know, I don't want kids. I've always dreamt of being the cool aunt who like kidnaps my niece and nephew, takes them to some really great campsite, gives them their first beer, don't tell mom, takes them back, watches The Exorcist with them and all these really cool things and be like, Aunt Desiree is so great. And it's like, and I ship you back to mom and dad. Like I've always wanted that lifestyle to be the really cool aunt. And he said, you know, I really want kids. Kids is really important to me. I've always wanted to be a dad. That's what I look forward to coaching my son's little league. And I thought, okay, well, that's not what I'm wanting. And this is a first date. So who knows where it'll go. Probably one of the best things that he did. And I always tell people this. The very next day, he sent me a lovely text message. Desiree, I had a great time. You are amazing. The energy was definitely there. But if I have to be honest with you, I really want to have kids. And that's really important for me. So good luck. I don't think we'll go out again. And I remember reading it and I was probably, I don't know, maybe 31 at the time. It was probably shortly after my divorce. So, you know, I consider young-esque in the dating world. Yeah. And I remember thinking that is so perfect.
Yeah.
And I wish more people did that. And
yeah, because otherwise people will spend 2-3 years together and then still be fighting that same question on something that really can be a deal breaker. Right. You cannot agree to disagree about whether we're having kids or not.
You truly can't. And I've always told people that that was probably one of the best, I don't want to date you text messages that I could have ever received because he was being extremely honest. And I remember responding to him saying, you know, thank you so much for that. I really, really appreciate it. I appreciate that that's how you feel. And I also appreciate that you understand that I feel the opposite. Mm-hmm. And I wish you the best. And I'm sure wherever he is, he's probably, you know, on baby number 4.
Coaching the league and
coaching the little league, you know, married to a woman who's ridiculously happy to be a mom. And I am just not that person for them.
Yeah.
So I understand that it can be really jarring to kind of be that blunt and that honest in the beginning. But imagine the heartbreak that you save from going down the other way. And then also, if you're smart like he was, and you do it in such a professional and such an honest and such a pure way.
Well, and kind, that person, right? Thoughtful.
And kind,
thoughtful. Yeah.
Kind and thoughtful. I really did look at that going, yeah, I didn't really get dumped, but I kind of just got let go in the best possible
way.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all these bits of wisdom. I appreciate it.
Yes.
So tell people where they can find your podcast and you. Where do they go?
Absolutely. So you can check out my blog, which is Desiree-Simone.com. That's D-E-S-I-R-E-E. And then the last name Simone, which is S-I-M-O-N-E. So you can go to the blog, which will direct you to the podcast. You can find the podcast on Apple and Spotify and anywhere podcasts you listen to. At Break Bottles, Not Hearts. Like I said, it is kind of a boozy, infused, slightly inappropriate comedy sex podcast. My fiance and I do have a tendency to start with a cocktail. And so depending on the topic, it can definitely go sideways. This past week, we talked a little bit about the Tinder Swindler, which if you haven't seen
it, I did just watch that this week, actually. Yeah.
We watched it. And I think every 5 minutes, I just looked at him going, I would never give anyone any money.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that I would, but I don't know. Living, you know, going with somebody who's on their own private jet and everything else, I don't know. That guy exactly. Really had it. Yeah,
exactly. So, of course, you could always check out that and definitely other hilariously, like I said, booze infused inappropriate episodes. And then, of course, you can follow me on Instagram at @IMDSimone.
Great. Well, thank you so much,
Jessa. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get to know you and question and answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that. Become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.